topics and opinions expressed in the following show are solely those of the hosts and their guests and not those of W4CY Radio, its employees, or affiliates. We make no recommendations or endorsements for radio show programs, services, or products mentioned on air or on our web. No liability, explicit or implied, shall be extended to W4CY Radio or its employees or affiliates. Any questions or comments should be directed to those show hosts. Thank you for choosing W4CY Radio.
Churchill said, "Those who fail to learn from history are condemned to repeat it." Kevin Hallinan believes that certainly applies to business. Welcome to Winning Business Radio here at W4CY Radio. That's W4CY.com. And now, your host, Kevin Hallinan.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Winning Business Radio. I'm your host, Kevin Hallinan. Thanks for being here. The mission of Winning Business Radio, as regular listeners know, is to offer insights and advice, you know, to help people avoid the mistakes of others, to learn best practices, the how-tos, the what-tos, the what-not-tos, to be challenged and hopefully, and I believe certainly, to be inspired by the successes of others. But it's interesting, virtually every successful person I've ever talked to has had some form of failure in their lives and careers. So while we all have to get our knees skinned once in a while, I'm driven to keep those scrapes from needing major surgery. I say it every week. Let's endeavor to learn from history so we don't repeat it. Today, my guest is David Coppins, co-founder and CEO of IntelliCare, the intelligent workforce management solution for post-acute healthcare facilities. You'll learn about that shortly. David is co-founder and CEO of IntelliCare. Prior to founding IntelliCare, David served as president of Virgin Pulse, part of Sir Richard Branson's Virgin Group. Before Virgin Pulse, David co-founded the college savings company UPromise in 1999. After Sallie Mae bought UPromise for $300 million in 2006, David remained with the company and was later named CEO. Earlier in his career, David held various roles in business consulting and private equity at companies including Monitor Deloitte and Monitor Clipper Partners. David holds a bachelor's in business management from Brigham Young University. He resides in Hull, Mass. With his wife of 36 years, Carol. They have four grown children and four grandchildren. Any pets, David?
No pets.
No pets. Welcome to the show. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
Well, you know, I got to say that most of the time when I read a bio of a guest, they tend to be longer. And I say that for a reason. In all fairness, I don't think that your bio really does justice. So there's a lot more to your story, and I'm hoping we can get that out. That's what I'm trying to do today. So let's start with your family. Tell us a little bit about Carol.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. You know, we were actually high school sweethearts.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
At a youth event just before the end of summer and the end of our junior year, I asked her out, and sure enough, she accepted. I knew I was 17 years old, but our first date, I knew I wanted to marry that woman. And it took her a little bit longer, you know, to get used to that idea. But sure enough, she's just been, just obviously a rock in my life and an inspiration in my life. Nobody works harder than she does, and just a tremendous mother. And now she's a tremendous business person. She's flipping houses and besides the bakery she used to own. But anyway, wonderful woman.
So cool. So cool. Thanks for telling us about that. And you have four grown kids. Tell us about your kids. One is a writer. I read the piece you had up, the Atlantic piece on.
Yeah. Election. My oldest, McKay Coppins, is a staff writer for the Atlantic magazine. They have three little children, and my daughter is a school teacher with the Boston Public School District, and her husband works in fuel cell technology. They live in Medford, Mass., and they just had their first.
Nice.
My next son, he lives in Brooklyn, New York, works for Sony Music, and his wife is a creative designer for sets and so on. And my my youngest daughter is works in the restaurant industry and also works in music and recently just joined a band that recently just got signed. So they're going to be on tour soon.
That's so cool. That's so cool. Yeah. What kind of music?
Hard to describe.
Yeah. That's close
enough. A little new agey. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Don't tell her we said this, right? Don't tell her you didn't really know.
Yeah.
So it looks like you grew up on the West Coast. I always like people to get a flavor of where guests started out. So is that true? West Coast, Washington?
Yeah, Spokane, Washington. Okay. Yep. A very large, small town. I couldn't wait to get out, to be honest. A lovely place. A lot of people enjoy it, but I was born there, but ended up moving 16 times before I graduated from high school. And we primarily all throughout Washington State, but we did live for a short stint in Alaska, and we lived for a short stint in Lake Tahoe, California. But for the most time, all throughout Washington State.
So it sounds like mom's or dad's career kept them moving.
Yeah, I'd say. Yeah.
What were they? What did they do? Your parents?
My dad worked for pharmaceutical sales for most of his career. And his and then he started a business and tried a variety of different things.
Yep. Mom, did she work?
Mom worked sometimes, but mostly just our mom. What we wanted, you know. I'm one of five children.
But, so it's funny, we had I grew up with a brother and two sisters. My wife had there were four siblings. We had four, kind of seemed like the right number, right?
Right.
So what were your, during high school, maybe just after, right around that time, what were your early interests?
Well, I was sort of an odd kid, Kevin. I was, I was obsessed with business, even from a very, as a young child. And in kind of very unproductive ways. It's kind of funny how it all turns out. But I was even when I was like 5 years old, I thought lemonade stands were beneath me. I wanted to sell trinkets. I wanted to sell stuff. Yeah, I wanted my own retail store, and so I would set up on street corners anyway. But when it came to high school, my parents were awesome, but they didn't really know anything about business. Mm-hmm. But I, some reason, growing up in the 80s, had all sorts of ideas of what that meant. And so I was just laser focused. So in high school, for example, by the time I was in my senior year, I was getting up at 3:30 AM. I would go to work. I would work for Merrill Lynch, in their accounting department, trying to, match up their trades from the day before. At 10 o'clock, I would go to high school, I had to take a couple classes home study in order to make up for that time. But then I also managed all of the school stores. Then I had a business on top of that. I started this little pizza business that was a mobile pizza business, kind of like an early version of a food truck. I had this vision for a food truck, but it was way, way, way before its time.
So cool.
So I was kind of crazy, but super obsessed, I would say, at the time.
Well, that probably served you well later on. We'll get there, right? If my math is right, it looks like you may not have taken a traditional route to college. Like you didn't. It looks to me like you didn't go to right to BYU after high school. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah. Okay. No, I went. In fact, the whole college experience was non-traditional, I would say.
Okay. Tell us about it.
But mostly because my parents didn't go to college, and I'm not sure that it was. I thought it was a good idea, but after high school, I went on a mission for my church. And so I went to Mexico, spoke Spanish for a couple of years, came back, married my high school sweetheart. I did go off to college, went off to BYU. And I was in, the business program, or at least that was my intent, to get into the business program. So I was there for 2 years, but I just felt like it was moving so slow. It was way too slow for me.
Yeah.
So I quit. I quit college, Kevin. I ended up saying, this is just going too slow. I got to do something. So I started a deli, a sort of a mobile sandwich shop. And it wasn't, like a truck concept. I did have place of business, but right. but we would send people out with a basket of sandwiches, and they'd stop in various businesses, small retail shops, mechanic shops, et cetera, just along the strip. And then they would come in, people that, you know, can't get away for lunch, and they would buy sandwiches for us. And unfortunately, and I say unfortunately, because I'll get to that in a second,
yep.
it went really well. And so I, you know, not knowing really anything about business, I believed I had the Midas touch. I believed, of course, you know,
why not?
I quit school. That was the right idea. I quit yep. school. I'm in business. I'm doing really well. And I'm just going to expand this business, continue to expand it. But then I sort of got bored with that and ended up selling it. And then decided, you know,
we call that an exit event, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it was small time, but it yeah. was, it was good. And I decided, you know what, I want to make a business that was, that you could make money in your sleep. Right.
I
was thinking vending machines. Vending machine, beautiful business, right? So then I decided, okay, well, where in the country do I want to live? And I decided, well, San Diego is a beautiful place. Why don't we start it in San Diego? So I got all my savings, the money we got from the business. Mm-hmm. I even got some money from some friends to invest in it. Got a whole bunch of
vending
machines.
Some things don't change, huh?
Yeah. Went out to San Diego and I was then beating the streets trying to get these vending machines placed. Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, Kevin, I was hitting brick wall after brick wall. It was just one bad experience after the other. Mm. And so long story, and it was a long story short, I had burned through all of the cash I'd saved, all of the capital I'd raised. I had maxed out all of my credit cards. I had not a dime left to my name or that I could borrow. I ended up homeless. I was living in this truck, this pickup truck, which is my only mode of transportation.
Yeah.
I ended up living.
I can picture a couple of vending machines in the back. I don't know.
Yeah. I had this truck, but the truck. I didn't even have enough money to get the truck licensed or insured. And I'm just trying to avoid the cops. And,
yeah.
I finally, you know, realized this just isn't going to work. You know, mm-hmm. I've got to go. And my brother-in-law had given me a ticket to a Dodgers game. And I was able to scalp the ticket for $7, which got me enough gas to get in my truck to get me all the way back to Los Angeles, which is where my brother-in-law lived, and we kind of, you know, went from there. And then, you know, from there, kind of tail between my legs, it was mm-hmm. time to go back to school. You know,
which you did, and you completed your degree.
Yeah. So that long story, long way of getting around. Sorry, but then the study was. Yeah, I did go back to school.
Yeah. Well, listen, our experiences make us what we are. So
yeah.
I'm sure you believe that. I definitely believe that. So your first job after college was Monitor Group, right?
Right.
I don't know if they were Deloitte when you were there or they purchased later, acquired later by Deloitte.
Yeah, they were acquired later. Yeah, much later, so, after I left, actually.
Now tell us about the company and your experience there, what you did.
Yeah, so... I was very focused. I mean, graduating. I mean, mm-hmm. when I came back to school, I said, you know what, I'm going to become the best student I could to get the mm-hmm. best opportunities. So I was really focused on investment banking, but then discovered late in my search about consulting. And by the way, this is pre-internet, so I didn't even know that was an option. I didn't mm-hmm. know investment banking was an option until I actually found a magazine in the trash that I was at school. I was working as a custodian and found this magazine and read this whole thing about investment banking for undergrad. I was like blown away. That's impossible, but I was excited. So anyway, I chose Monitor because I just really felt like their story made a lot more sense for me, more well-rounded, not just transactional or very focused on the financial side of it, but rather all aspects of kind of the business issues that the company was trying to solve. Now, obviously, you know, I'm a kid fresh out of school. You know, you're not getting charged, for a lot of money at a consulting firm, but the work I was able to do was phenomenal. And it gave me, I never got an MBA, but largely my experience 7 years at Monitor was my MBA. I worked in so many different industries. The learning curve was so huge, but it was just a tremendous time. I'd say that was the hardest I've ever worked in my life and the most important growing time I've ever had in my life. I ended up working, just these 80-hour weeks. I'm telling you, the things that I learned at the speed that I learned them has kind of, helped me throughout all of my career.
That's outstanding. Hey, this is a good place to take our first break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with David Coppins, co-founder and CEO of IntelliCare. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Winning Business Radio with Kevin Hallinan on W4CY Radio. That's W4CY.com. Don't go away. More helpful information is coming right up, right here on Winning Business Radio.
Is your pet overweight? Suffer from itchy skin and coat problems? Showing signs of food allergies? Then do your pet a favor. Stop by Fiesta Pet Deli, South Florida's original and only fresh food deli for pets. Prepared daily and FDA approved with products like Bravo, Nature's Variety, and BioComplete. Listen, dogs and cats are carnivores. 90% of their diet should be meat. That dry kibble you put in their bowl every day contains less than half of what their bodies require. Veterinarian owned and operated, Fiesta Pet Deli has one mission: to get your pet as healthy as possible. Give them a call today at 954-971-2500 or come check out their new store at the Festival Flea Marketplace at Sample Road and the Turnpike in Pompano, Florida. They also offer free local delivery, shipping throughout the United States. Check out their website at www.realfoodforpets.com or just Google Fiesta Pet Deli. If you truly love your pet and care about their health, stop by Fiesta Pet Deli. Call today at 954-971-2500.
Hey, this is Kenny Wayne Shepherd, and you're listening to W4CY Radio.
Have you ever dreamt of being on the radio? Well, now is your chance. Be a radio show guest on the number one ranked internet radio station and promote you and your business for free. Yes, you heard it, free. Business advertising right here on W4CY.com. Call 561-506-4031 now to get booked on one of our shows. That's 561-506-4031. Get your free advertising now.
You can tell what's wrong with a car just by sitting next to it at a red light. You can tear down a big block engine in 26 minutes. You know cars. We can help you find more of them to work on. And together, we can get your small business moving in the right direction. At AT&T Advertising Solutions, we have more ways to reach more people. With print, online, mobile, and direct marketing, AT&T Advertising Solutions has local advertising experts to help your small business find more customers. Call 1-800-GET-REAL to learn more. AT&T, rethink possible.
And now back to Winning Business Radio with Kevin Hallinan, presenting exciting topics and expert guests with one goal in mind, to help you succeed in business. Here once again is Kevin Hallinan.
We're back with David Coppins, co-founder and CEO of IntelliCare. So, David, we're talking about your time at Monitor Group. You, without even my asking, you shared a really good takeaway about your MBA-like experience. But in you were there for about 5.5 years, according to your LinkedIn profile, and then you moved over to Monitor Clipper Partners in 97 for a couple of years. Tell us about that company and your experience there.
So a lot of my time at Monitor was spent the last few years. My clients were private equity funds. We would help funds like T.H. Lee and Berkshire Partners and Bain Capital find places to invest based upon trends we were seeing in the consulting work we were doing globally. And then we would help them through diligence and then help them set strategy. And, you know, we helped these guys make a lot of money. We decided we should probably, raise our own fund and create a private equity group. We didn't really understand all of the financial engineering aspects of it. So we partnered with the Clipper Group. That's why it ended up becoming Monitor Clipper Partners. Mm-hmm. They had a relatively small fund, and we ended up combining forces, and we raised $630 million for our first fund, and we were out making investments. I got to tell you that you were asking what was some takeaways. First of all, you know, very, very helpful to understand the way private equity kind of evaluates businesses to invest in. Mm-hmm. What are the key things that they look for? What are the metrics? What do they care about? You know, and that helped kind of frame a lot of what I was thinking as we ended up, well, as we raised capital in New Promise, mm-hmm. we raised capital in all these other companies. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I learned is that I was bored to death. here it is, private equity, you know, yeah. it's like the holy grail for every beautiful kid. And I was like, hey, you get into private equity, dude, you made it. And and had I stayed, of course, I would have made lots and lots of money. But but I got to tell you, I was not super excited about evaluating the next deal. I got more excited about the companies that we had invested in and how to make them great. Yeah. I mean, this is where I finally realized. This is where I finally realized that I need to be building companies, not kind of consulting to them or investing in them, but actually being the company. And that's effectively when I left to go start New Promise. But I tell you, one of the other things that drove me out. Now I got to tell you, it's changed a lot over the last many years. But one of the things that is the arrogance in private equity, even among just my own colleagues, was extraordinary. And I can't deal with that. I can't stand it. That people just, can't deal with it. So that was another thing that kind of drove me away. Now, I will say that in many of the companies, most of the venture capitalists that I work with now, that I definitely do not see that same arrogance.
That's good. Because that reputation has been there for sure.
Yeah. So I would say that there's definitely been an awakening maybe. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. but boy, certainly during that time, I just couldn't stand it. So anyway, that was my takeaway, Kevin.
I like it. All right. Then you took the leap and you co-founded and became the president of New Promise, which was a company that I knew fairly well. We were, we took advantage of it for a while. Tell us about tell listeners about the company, the concept and your role.
Yeah, New Promise was this idea. It wasn't mine. That was saying, you know what? There's a way to kind of bring some good from all of the spending, that we have to do in our day-to-day lives. We got to buy groceries. Got to buy gas. We're going to go to retail stores. We're going to buy online. We're going to buy some stuff. Mm-hmm. And at the time when we started this, and it hasn't really changed, that there's kind of a college savings crisis in the country. There's just not enough. Most people are just not saving enough. And so what we thought was, what if we could bring together a coalition of thousands of retailers and restaurants and gas stations, grocery stores, and so on, and say, if our members make a purchase at your company, that you'll put a contribution in their college savings account. And so we built that. And it was new, a new idea at the time for sure. And we ended up doing a lot of firsts, which made it difficult, of course. But we ended up, with tens of thousands of locations across the country, lots of online shopping.
Were things just for listeners' sakes, these were things that people were buying anyway.
Yeah. Right. I mean, obviously you don't want to go spend to save, a buck for college, but if you're going to be spending anyway, then really, you might as well direct it to one of the companies that's going to give you some savings for college. And so we basically were able to create that. It was a good time when entrepreneurship and social good started to kind of start to merge. Mm-hmm. Doing well by doing good. And that was the idea kind of behind it, that we could have a private company, we could have all of these companies kind of create a coalition, and that they would be there to try to help support you in your college savings. And it was, we never, you know, you were never going to pay for all of your college just by, you know, your own spend. But I think I ended up getting like $12,000, you know, through directing my own spend.
Yeah, we had, my wife and I, we had a nice chunk too. Was that a 529?
Yep, then you ended up putting in a 529.
Right.
But the the hope was, is it got people in the mindset of saving for college. Mm-hmm. And that you could, and then from there, it was easy to start your own 529 plan. In fact, we ended up with becoming the largest 529 company in the country.
Wow.
It's good business. And then eventually sold it to the largest saving for college company, Sallie Mae. Mm-hmm. And then that's when I stayed on with the company for a few more years to keep growing that business.
Talk about the process of starting a company like You Promise. What's involved?
Oh, my goodness.
I know. Yeah. That's in an encapsulated form.
Well, you know, this is an important point, because there's so many ideas out there. So many ideas, but honestly, the ideas aren't that meaningful. And I know that that's kind of a hard thing for people to hear sometimes. It's really the execution that matters. This is going to sound like I'm bragging, but the fact that I've now done this a few times, I'm kind of convinced that even a relatively bad idea, I could probably figure out a way to make it a reasonably successful business. It wouldn't be very big, but because anybody who has this idea believes that because it's what they want,
it's
right?
Their passion.
So if it's what they want, then there's a segment of people out there. There's some group of people that would want the same thing, right? So I believe there is a way to do it. But so ultimately, it is about the execution and. Frankly, you know, when we started You Promise, I didn't know much about that either. Remember, I just came out of consulting and private equity. I was telling people how to do stuff, but I hadn't really done it, you know.
Yeah, there is a difference.
Yeah, and then finally, I loved it. Oh, my gosh, it was just the most exhilarating thing, where every day you go to work, you realize, holy smokes, what I do today matters. Like, if I don't advance this today, we're now behind. And yet when you're consulting, you could kind of mentally check out for a day or two, you know. Mm-hmm. You still might have to work a weekend, but, you know, it's interesting. Anyway, I think back to your point, starting a business, you know, it's the smartest thing to do, I think, is to learn how the game is played. And so it's hard, let's say, the concept of You Promise, because it had never been done before.
Right.
Having said that, if you're a lone person and you know you're not going to go out and raise $20 million in capital just to get your business plan started, you got to start somewhere. And so ideally what you would have done, and because this ended up being a loyalty program, go work for another loyalty program. Like, go live the live it for a while. Like, when my wife started a bakery, the idea was go work in a bakery,
learn the business.
Yeah. And then if you still like it after doing the yucky work, you know, then it's probably right. So first thing is, you got to learn how it's played. I know we're coming up on time, but
we're good.
Tenacity, I think, is really key here. And actually, that's another lesson we can talk about later.
Yeah.
But I think it's essentially getting an understanding of the basics. Do you have an audience that you think wants this? Well, go talk to them. Actually, you know, go back to my little sandwich business when I was in college, leaving college. I first walked around to all these businesses and I said, you know what, if I showed up one day with a basket of really, you know, yummy looking sandwiches, would you buy one? And, you know, it actually worked out really well. I got a great, it was a bit of market research, but, you know, you got right in front of people.
That's fantastic.
And, And then from there, you just got to make sure you got the product right, the pricing. And if it's technology related, you got to find a way to get a prototype, or you'll never raise any capital, you know, that kind of thing. So.
All right. Well, there's a natural break right there. It's half past the hour. We're going to take our second break right here. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. We'll be back again with David Coppins, CEO and co-founder, let's be fair, of IntelliCare. And I'll tell you what that is again, the Intelligent Workforce Management Solution for Post-Acute Healthcare Facilities. And you'll learn what that is after the break.
You're listening to Winning Business Radio with Kevin Hallinan on W4CY Radio. That's W4CY.com. Don't go away. More helpful information is coming right up, right here on Winning Business Radio.
Be seen, be heard on the Internet's number one ranked radio station right here in West Palm Beach. What a way for your business to have a voice. Now is the time to advertise your business on W4CY.com. Call 561-506-4031 for a deal you won't refuse. Again, that's 561-506-4031. Don't wait. Call now.
Hey, this is Johnny Three Tears from Hollywood Undead, and you're listening to W4CY Radio.
I do whatever it takes to make it breakthrough. Anything I face to face with, it's true.
Have you ever dreamed of having your own radio show? Well, W4CY Radio makes dreams come true. You can be a radio personality on the number one ranked internet radio station in West Palm Beach, Florida. We can be heard in 105 countries and all U.S. states. Promote your business, earn up to $10,000 per month and more. It's all up to you. Have fun and be heard. Call 561-506-4031. That's 561-506-4031. Start your radio show now.
This is Colt Ford, and you're listening to W4CY Radio.
And now back to Winning Business Radio with Kevin Hallinan, presenting exciting topics and expert guests with one goal in mind, to help you succeed in business. Here once again is Kevin Hallinan.
We're back with David Coppins, co-founder and CEO of IntelliCare. And David, I wanted to just touch on your time at UPromise for another one or two questions here. Actually, two questions. First, when did you see your first revenue? You founded the company in late 99, right?
Yeah, late 99. Raised our first round of capital in January of 2000. Mm-hmm. It took us about a year and 4 or 5 months to kind of get our first bit of revenue. So April 2001 is when we did the big launch.
Great. Cool. All right. And last question on UPromise. Not an easy question, but what was the most difficult part of getting it going?
Yeah. You know, there were a lot of things, because it was sort of a chicken and egg, which ends up becoming the same thing at IntelliCare. We'll talk about that later. But you want a bunch of members, but the members are not going to sign up unless they know that there's going to be a way for them to save money. And then you want to go to all these companies and say, we can help direct all of the spend to you. Mm-hmm. And they're like, okay, great. How many millions of members do you have? Well, I have none right now, but it's going to be great. It really is going to be great. So the hardest part was just keeping the excitement and the momentum and trying to kind of get prepared that we could really launch and actually gather all of these different members in and get them working and towards, saving for college. But boy, that was a bit of a challenge. It was a little more of an emotional sell, Kevin, when you really kind of went through the whole college savings crisis. And there's some crazy stats out there and how people just can't afford it. And then you kind of get the CEO of this major company on board, you know, from a social good standpoint.
Yeah.
And then it kind of from there, you know, paved the way a little bit easier. And we, you know, offered exclusivity and so on. But that was the hardest part. Sure.
Good answer. All right. So you after 2012, you stuck around for a while, but you left in 2012 for Sir Richard Branson's Virgin Group. Virgin Pulse here in Massachusetts, part of that. Talk about the company, why you decided to go there, and that'll take us to IntelliCare.
Sure. Yeah. So after Sally Mae started to have some financial difficulties and needed to kind of cut costs pretty dramatically over yep. at UPromise, felt like it was time to move on from there. And the friend of mine who had the original business plan for UPromise, mm-hmm. he was then CEO at Virgin Pulse. And he had just kind of rescued that company from, they just burned through so much money. They'd gone through like three different pivots, trying to decide what they were going to be. Mm. And finally, you know, once Chris Boyce, figured out, that the model really needs to be a sale to the HR department. It needs to be an employee benefit. Mm-hmm. It needs to be an incentivized way to get your employees, active, moving, being in a wellness
healthy
program sort
right,
of way,
right. Yeah.
Was the kind of, you know, was the first to have a, once he kind of said that's the model, then he became CEO and really took off from there. They had just pivoted to this final model when he asked me to join the company. And as president, he and I kind of divided up the responsibilities in the business. They were doing about $13 million of revenue at the time. A lot of it was sort of legacy revenue from the old model. Mm-hmm. So it was still trying to convert that and then actually roll out this new model. I got to tell you, it was pretty remarkable. They had the first pedometer that you could upload steps to the internet. Now, he should have called it Fitbit, but instead, you know, we went on and built this this company to be, instead of a consumer product, rather it was a product to give to employers mm-hmm. for their employees. I joined. It was an exciting kind of aspirational sale to the HR department. My mm-hmm. job was to make sure that all the clients were seeing value, and the best way that they saw value was if most of their employees were participating in this program. So therefore, mm-hmm. I also was responsible for getting all of their employees to join and to be engaged in the program and to be participating. So it was interestingly, because it actually had a lot of similarities to a two-sided marketplace, similar to yeah. what we had at UPromise, what we have at IntelliCare. Mm-hmm. But this idea that you needed to show value for both the employer and the employee. And I took a lot of learnings that I got from UPromise, particularly kind of the behavioral science stuff, and just blew it up at Virgin Pulse. And that's where we really went into the behavioral science, behavioral economics, and built that in an enormous way, kind of built it all into an app, you know, that would actually motivate people to change their lives. And we did. We were very fast growing, you know.
And innovative, because that was 2012.
Yeah.
Nobody else was doing that I recall.
No. There were a lot of people that copied since then. But after 4.5 years and we kind of hit that $100 million revenue, you know, mm-hmm. Benchmark, which everybody kind of wants to get to in software. Mm-hmm. Once we kind of got to that point, that's when, you know, I started to get the itch to start something new again.
So talk about that decision. 2016 was when you founded and co-founded with your team IntelliCare. You took on the role of CEO. First, tell the listening audience about the company itself.
Yeah. So IntelliCare is an exciting thing. So think about it like if you were, you know, hiring DoorDash to bring your groceries, you're essentially yeah. hiring a nurse to go work at a nursing home. So a nursing home, let's say, is hiring a nurse to work a shift. So nursing homes and assisted living facilities and just generally, you know, memory care centers and rehab and so on. Mm-hmm. All these kind of post-acute care facilities are most often are chronically understaffed. And mm-hmm. so they've been turning, you know, to staffing agencies for kind of, you know, forever. But staffing agencies haven't evolved, haven't really put any technology behind it, and ultimately just can't really serve the needs of these particular clients. And it wasn't a straight line. Again, it required a pivot, Kevin, to kind of figure out what this was. But ultimately, the goal was, again, the client facility, just to get a baseline of what the business is, nursing homes say, I need to fill my shift on Saturday with a nurse, and then I need a CNA on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And then they will go in, and they go in and they put it up on our site. They submit the request, and it goes through a bunch of data science algorithms, and then it shows up on the app of our nurses. We have 20,000 nurses and nurse assistants across the country that have our app and that are actively checking, and then they go in and they accept a shift that they want to go work in there. The price, the pay rates are dynamic based upon supply demand, and they can go in and find really great shifts for really great rates and get paid well. They go in, and check out on the app, and then they get paid.
And you guys have grown really quickly. I mean, in a healthy way. You're 41 on the 2000 Inc. 5000 list and number one BBJ Boston Business Journal Fast 50 for 2020 as well. So congratulations. What do you attribute that growth to? There's certainly a need, but what do you attribute that growth to?
So, we're not my team, by the way, the team, the co-founding team is Ike and Prince Na and Chris mm-hmm. Caulfield and myself. Mm-hmm. And when we started this, like I said, this was a pivot, and it wasn't my idea. Again, that's kind of a theme.
Right.
But it was Ike and Chris kind of built it as a Uber for home care concept, mm-hmm. but instead found that that wasn't growing as well. And these guys have a high growth mindset. Mm-hmm. And once Prince came up with the idea to say maybe we should try this in nursing homes to fill shifts, then it clicked because they had one client. The client said, "Oh my gosh, where have you been all my life? This is amazing." Yeah. And then you know they referred two more, and that was in September of 2016. And those two signed up, and they're like, "Oh my gosh, this is amazing! Where have you been all my life?" And then that's when I joined as CEO. It was October of 2016. Ike had been asking me; he's been a longtime friend of mine, and had been asking me to join as CEO. But we finally hit that 100 million mark at Virgin Pulse, and it made sense for me to kind of now move on. And I was excited about this opportunity. Looking at healthcare staffing, just no real technology, and that's what kind of fired me up and got me excited. So you asked, why is our growth so fast? I'd say that it's not just the fact that we're doing this. It's just a so much better experience for the client and for the nurses. Mm-hmm. It's not one-sided, right? We're bringing technology to something that just hasn't ever had it, and it's solving a lot of problems for both sides of that market. And both sides are just getting so much benefit out of it. And we're not thinking we want to do this slow and steady. It started to blow up in Massachusetts. We said, okay, well, let's go to Rhode Island. And then it just blew up in Rhode Island. And we're like, let's go to Pennsylvania. And it just blew up from there. And then we went into Ohio. And now, you know, within a year in Ohio, we were the number one market share leader in Ohio. And it just kind of kept going from there. And now we're opening, you know, we're 20 states right now. We're opening five more in the next few months. You know, the model now works so well that we're solving problems for both sides. Let's just keep expanding.
Yeah, that's tremendous. So you're not a traditional staffing agency. You're really a technology company. Talk about that.
Yeah, our founding base really was Ike, and it was very technology driven. Mm-hmm. In fact, we were thinking there must be a way to solve this issue of these facilities getting a shift filled easily. Most of the time, they have to call up an agency and they have to put their request in 2 weeks before, and then still the agency can only fill maybe, you know, 4 out of 20 requests they might have. Mm-hmm. And like, okay, well, then they go on to another agency and another agency. And effectively, they've got relationships with 5 or 6 agencies. And yet it's a massive headache to try to juggle it all. And what
time
we've done.
Consuming.
Yes, very time consuming. And then you also have inconsistent training because you're pulling people from 5 or 6 mm-hmm. agencies. Mm-hmm. We just said, you know what, we know that if we put the power in the hands of both these clients and our nurses, that the marketplace will actually make it work. And so it's easy for us to bring on new nurses, get them credentialed, get them in the system. We have a very efficient machine to do that. And then they now have hundreds of options open to them. Instead of waiting around for a phone call and saying, hey, do you want to work Friday night? I'm like, mm-hmm. I don't want to work Friday night. You know, and then you have to wait for the next phone call. And it's just kind of, it's silly. So it's long overdue. We were happy to be the ones to bring it to market.
And this all happens through a platform, through an app. So the nurse has an app, the provider, a nurse or a CNA, they have their phone, really.
They do. So it's the app that works, you know, extremely well for them. And it's also driven by various machine learning algorithms that that help them see the best shifts available to them right at the top. And then on the client side, they've got a whole dashboard, you know, easy for them to mm-hmm. Not only put in requests, but they can see where their open shifts are. And then we've also added this really cool tool that's just about to come out that allows them to send a text to all of their own staff asking if they want to take the shift before they send it to us. We're trying to partner with our clients and mm-hmm. make it easier mm-hmm. for them to fill with their own staff before they have to turn to us. Same thing with the scheduling software we're offering for free, which is that they can schedule their own staff and try to optimize their own staff and try to get the most out of that before they turn to us to fill in the rest.
So what would you say are the biggest problems you're solving for facilities? I can think of a couple, but what are the biggest problems? I mean, especially through COVID.
Yeah, wow. COVID decimated the workforce. The workforce, which was fascinating, because everyone talks about how many people have taken their parents or somebody out of the nursing homes, and their census has gone down from 86% to about 78%. So it's definitely a drop, but they've lost hundreds of thousands of workers. People have left the employment of long-term care facilities without the intention of returning. And we even felt that a bit when COVID first hit. But now we've become the lifeline for these companies because they can't operate without enough staff. And so that's the idea is that they've got to be able to have an RN on the floor 24/7. They mm-hmm. have to have, you know, certain ratios of CNAs, and they're trying to keep up with it. And sometimes they end up pulling people in from cafeteria workers and so on just to help because they're just so understaffed.
And senior staff has to step in at times.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely.
And so the other thing you've done, you mentioned this briefly, was consistency in training. You've prepared your providers, your nurses and CNAs for that environment, state specific, right?
Definitely.
COVID protocols and really everything they need to know.
Yeah. In fact, we were the first ones in the country, first of any healthcare company in the country to have a COVID-19 training program.
Wow.
We were putting together something similar, and we were able to repurpose it and get it out there. And it went wild. I don't want to use the word viral, but it went wild. We had over 600,000 people complete our COVID-19 training course, which we originally just created for our own mm-hmm. IntelliPros. But yes, we have training is state specific. It's app based. There's quizzes, and it's really a tremendous kind of system for them.
We are almost out of time. We have probably got a minute here. What would you say you're most proudest of at this point? Most proud of. That was terrible.
You know, at IntelliCare, I would say the thing that I'm most proud of is that we are able to grow fast and still maintain the culture of our company, which is so vital. And our culture is one where we're very collaborative, we're very supportive of each other. We really try hard, and I really mean this, that if anybody walked into my office and said, I need help with something, I would jump up. And that is just is exactly all over the company is just like that. But a lot of fast-growing companies can't seem to maintain that that culture. They get bureaucratic. Yeah. They're not necessarily all pulling together in the same direction. And so I'd say I'm most proud of that. In fact, I had to let 3 senior people we hired go because I didn't. This is a mistake I made, but I didn't really interview for culture fit. Instead, I interviewed for their skills and then they ended up being toxic in the organization and bringing all sorts of craziness. And we just, as much as it set us back and our growth plans for that year, we had to let them go. And now our number one thing we interview for is culture. And then from there, we try to see if they've got enough skills to make the job work.
That's fantastic. Well, we're out of time. What's the best way for people who may have questions or they'd like to contact you? What's the best way to reach out?
Sure. David at IntelliCare.com.
Nice and easy. Nice and easy. David, thank you so much for being here. I appreciate your time. It's been a treat.
Absolutely, Kevin. Great to be with you.
And thank you, everyone, for listening. This is a show about business and business challenges and successes. If you've got concerns about the growth of your company, feel free to reach out to me on Facebook or LinkedIn at Winning Business Radio. Or you can drop me a note, kevin@winningbusinessradio.com. Our company's Winning Incorporated. We're part of Sandler Training. We always say we develop sales teams into high achievers and sales leaders into true coaches and mentors. We're not right for everybody, but maybe we should talk. Thank you, as always, to expert engineer Rebel Medler. Tune in again next Monday, May 3rd at 4 p.m. Eastern. We're going to do it all over again. Until then, this is Kevin Hallinan.
You've been listening to Winning Business Radio with your host, Kevin Hallinan. If you missed any part of this episode, the podcast is available on Talk 4 Podcasting and iHeartRadio. For more information and questions, go to winningbusinessradio.com or check us out on social media. Tune in again next week and every Monday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time to listen live to Winning Business Radio on W4CY Radio, W4CY.com. Until then, let's succeed where others have failed. And win in business with Kevin Hallinan and Winning Business Radio.